Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
This is Jim Nunley, and I have the pleasure of talking to Mr. Charles McFeels, and he's going to tell us his story. A little bit about bowling, a little bit about what it was like to live during the wars, but mostly just kind of what motivates and moves him and makes him who he is today. But before getting into that, there was a quote from a Shakespearean play, and the line goes something like, "Me thinkest thou protest too much." And it was said in a situation where a person who was slightly guilty of a crime, and they were just protesting and just being against everything that was said. And so the speaker quickly noted that protesting was maybe one of the things that would lead to guilt or dishonor. But as we search through these bowling history and people, we find that really there was a silent protest going on all the time. And yet, somehow or another, those voices are just now being heard. So today we're going to talk to Mr. Charles McFeel. We'll get into a little bit of that protest, but more importantly, we're going to kind of find out a little bit about the person, and then we'll find out how they relate to bowling, but more importantly, the silent protest. Let's talk to you. You are?
Charles B. McFeel, Sr.
And what's that B stand for?
Brentford.
Brentford. Now, how is that a family name?
That's a family. My grandfather was named Brentford Charles, so they named me Charles Brentford.
All right. So you got it just in reverse there.
Right.
Okay. And the McFeels is a family name from?
From Roatan, Central America.
Roatan, Central America.
That's where my father was born.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then how, you know, is that, I mean, international stuff? How did you get to the United States?
He came over to the United States and graduated from Tuskegee Institute in 1919.
Wow.
And then he went from Tuskegee, Alabama, he went through Pine Bluff, Arkansas, up to Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, so tell me.
He was a tailor by trade.
He was a tailor, okay. That's what I was going to ask you. What did he have going for it? Is that what he learned at Tuskegee?
Right.
Is that what that? Okay, so we're in 1919.
Right.
Are we in wartime now during that period?
No.
We're not quite in the war yet, the First World War.
Well, First World War, it was during that time. The First World War was, what, 1941, wasn't it?
Well, that was the Second
World
War.
That was Second.
Right.
But 1918.
You're beginning to kind of get into, we're not in the war, United States, but it is kind of
right,
a growing
area,
war at
right.
that time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me, is this a black person coming to the United States from Central America?
Yes.
Okay, and so what was life like for him?
Well, during those times, of course, everything was segregated.
Okay.
And so he more or less established tailoring business in Kansas City, Missouri, and then he eventually went to Kansas City, Kansas, and we lived in Quindara, Kansas.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with Quindara
mm-hmm.
or not.
I do. That's a town.
Quindara, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
right. And so in 1928, I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and then at that time, I think I was born by a midwife.
Hmm. Okay, but before we get to you, let's get this picture clear. Okay, now, for those of us who may not know, Quindaro, Kansas was a
suburb.
It was
of
a
Kansas
suburb
of
Kansas City, Kansas. And
right.
was it, what relationship did it have to segregation?
Well, it had the different crowds. It had the black crowd and the white crowd. In other words, it had the had the black school, Vernon High School.
Okay.
And not high school, Vernon Grade School, which I attended in the kindergarten and first, second grade, and then went to he established his business in 1950 North Fifth Street, Kansas.
All right. So this is still the tailoring business.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, are you got any fondness for tailoring or whatever? Did you pass it on? Do you know about the business at all?
Well, yeah, I still do my alterations as taking up my pants and the hem and the waist and everything. I still do that.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. And what were you like way back then? You said you were born in 28, right?
Right.
Okay, and so like as a teenager, did you tailor your own clothes and stuff then at that point?
No. I was a teenager. I just worked in the shop.
You just worked in the shop. So what did you learn in the shop?
Well, I learned first how to shine shoes and wrap hangers, and then help him as far as anything, delivering clothes. At that time, we delivered clothes on a bicycle.
Oh.
See, my cousin Clarence Love, he was a representative in the Kansas Congress, and so he was the presser. He used to press clothes for my father, and then he helped me deliver.
All right, so tell me what it's like growing up in an entrepreneurial family. I mean, everybody else is, you know, about to go into the Depression and the crash of the 30s, and the president's about to get us in the war. What is it like to be a black entrepreneur in Kansas City, Kansas?
Well, at that time, Kansas, there was only two clean pressing shops. That was Bowden down on 5th Street, and also O.H. McPhil on a little further up north.
And that's your place.
Right.
Okay.
And they had the theater, the Prince Theater and the Regal Theater. And they had Kansas City Bowl down there on 5th and Richmond.
Yeah, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, so this is black Kansas City, Kansas?
Right.
Right. And how far north did the boundaries extend in Kansas City, Kansas?
The boundaries of west was around, I'd say, 13th Street.
Okay.
And north, it was around Cleveland, Roland, really a little bit north of Quindara Boulevard.
Okay.
And
how far downtown?
Goodness, downtown.
They come up to State?
I'd say probably State.
Probably State.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, was this, even though Kansas was a free state, was there this segregation going on at this time for you?
Actually, back in those days, you really didn't notice the segregation. In other words, you just more or less knew your place, and you kind of stayed in your place. I didn't worry too much about the white part of town. It went, you know, we knew where our limits were and just enjoyed where we were.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I didn't have any confrontation as far as the
race,
right? Mm-hmm.
That what you said just kind of rings in my head. You kind of stayed in your place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was that kind of what everybody felt at that time?
I think so. We had the Sumner High School.
The now went, famous Sumner High School.
Right, yeah. Right, same Sumner Academy now. But I went to Stowe Grade School. I went to Northeast Junior High School. I went to Sumner and then also to KU. So just went through the different schools and just enjoyed life.
All right. So your family kind of migrated, starting in Central America, getting to Alabama, coming to Pine Bluff, on into Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, like, was that most people? Were they mostly from the South that were gathering or migrating to Kansas City, Kansas?
You know, I think so. I think quite a few of the people were from the South.
Okay.
And, I would say that. You know.
All right, what's your house look like?
Well, the house... That you grew up in. Well, the house I grew up in would be Quindara, Kansas.
Okay.
It was a stone house, and on the parkway, right below let's see, right below Western University.
Okay.
That's where my my mother graduated from, and she was also graduated in tailoring.
No.
So she used to help my father in the tailor shop.
All right, so she was the woman behind the scenes.
You might say that.
You got brothers and sisters, Charles?
Yeah, I have three brothers.
Okay, and three where are you in the birth order?
I was second.
My
oldest brother and my younger brother are deceased now.
Okay.
And so back in those days, you know, you more or less hand-me-downs.
Yes.
You know, on for the clothing.
Hand-me-downs in
right.
a clothing business.
Right. And you walked everywhere you went.
I got it. Mm-hmm. I got it. All right, we got kind of a good idea here, kind of how you grew up, and we got one part that we got to get more before we move on to how you got involved in the bowling and whatever. Mm-hmm. But where was the church in your life?
Let's see.
Both growing
it
up
was,
and now.
Trinity AME Church on mm-hmm. 5th and Greeley.
All right.
And we would when we located on 5th Street. Then we used to walk up to Greeley to the church every Sunday.
Okay.
And then, of course, my mother was with the Paramount Workers.
What's the Paramount Workers?
That was a group of women in the church.
Okay.
And then my father was in the choir. And
could he sing?
And yes, he could sing.
He could sing. Now, you laughed. What did that laugh mean?
That means he was just in the choir.
He was a good tailor, but a so-so singer.
Right. Okay. Right.
All right. Was he a big guy in the community?
I would think so. Yeah, he was well known and well recognized, and he was the tailor on 5th Street. Yeah. Everybody knew him as being the tailor.
Okay.
They came all around.
Did he help people?
Yeah, in tailoring,
yes. or just otherwise.
Yeah, any way he could. Okay. Any way he could.
Like, give me an example of one thing you remember where he helped somebody.
Well, actually, outside of tailoring, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, if anybody came to him as far as needing a little money or this
okay,
or that,
so he lent money.
He would help out
okay.
as much as he could.
Very good. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to draw here is that once somebody is successful, you know, they sort of. Or at least they look like you got something, or you at least got something. You know, people mm-hmm. borrow from mm-hmm. you or whatever. So was he generous?
As much as he could.
But he was a businessman.
Run a business there, you know, you have to more or less have limitations, so to speak.
All right, one more word. What did he impress on you the most?
By being the type of person that he was very, at that time, I think, very dominating. He took care of his family. He had four children, four boys, and every Easter he'd make each one of us a suit. We'd go to the shop and pick out a pattern, and he would make it.
So his gift was his talent.
His talent, right?
Mm-hmm. To you. Mm-hmm. All right, very interesting. All right, let's move forward. How'd you get into bowling, Charles? Or how? What does bowling mean to you? How did you get started? Mm-hmm. Where did it begin? Tell me.
Mm-hmm. In 1954, I married my wife Lillian, and in 1955, she bought me a bowling ball and a bowling bag. And she said, that's the worst mistake she ever made.
1955.
Because although I only bowled two or three times at Monarch, I think my bowling career really started at Melody Lane. That's when it started league bowling. But at that time, I was bowling maybe three, four, five times a week.
Okay.
And that's why she made that statement.
Because you were always at the bowling.
Yeah, because she was home with the two children, and I'm there bowling every night. You know, and so. But eventually there, I decided that this isn't right because I'm here socializing and everything, and then she's there with the two kids. I cut it back to one time a week, which I'm bowling now one time a week.
Still on.
But Melody Lane, and then you had Rhythm Lane, and then I used to go to Flather Bowl to bowl. My wife was on a nursing team from Trinity Lutheran Hospital, and I used to go with her there. And then, of course, you had King Louis East, King Louis Red Bridge, Premier. You had Playmore. And then at that time, back in those days, the post office had a team or with a league in at Broadway Bowl. So many people don't remember Broadway Bowl. That was, so that's about how I got started and how I enjoyed it. Bowling is my favorite now. In other words, I tell everybody that I'm available on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but nothing on Tuesday.
That's your bowling day.
That's my bowling day. Right. You know, the funniest thing now, my mother was in a nursing home in Kansas City, Kansas, and she called several times and said, "Charles, something going on over here. I need you to come over." So I'd go over there, and then when I got over there, she'd say, "Charles, what are you doing over here?" You know, so that particular day, it was on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So she said, "Charles, I need you to come over here." So I said, "Well, Mother, you know this is Tuesday, so I'll be over just as soon as bowling over." So she said, "Well, I guess when St. Peter called me, I should tell him, call me any day but Tuesday." And you know, the ironic thing about it is she passed on Tuesday.
Is that right? She
passed on Tuesday.
Is that right? Well, so you're still dedicated. I wanted to, two things I want to pick up on about the Plaza Bowl. You mm-hmm. mentioned the Plaza Bowl because mm-hmm. I want to find out where you're going there. But I mentioned earlier that I wanted to deal with this wartime thing, especially World War II. Mm-hmm. Okay, so are you still in Kansas City, Kansas, doing World War II?
Yeah, I was going to Sumner.
You were going to Sumner. So you were
41.
41, yeah. 42. About how old are you now?
83. I'm 83 now.
When the war started.
Then I was 16, 17.
Were you supposed to go to the war? Were they signing you up to go to the war? I mean, what was happening?
No, I didn't go to the Army until when I was at KU. That was in 1950.
Okay, so you were doing the Korean conflict.
War, yeah,
okay, but since you're a young man now and you're dealing in Kansas City, Kansas, there is wartime. There are shortages of certain foods. Describe me kind of what life was like during the wartime, World War II now, in Kansas City, Kansas, where you're growing up. Just give me a quick glimpse, and then we'll go back to the Plaza Bowl.
Let's see. 1941. I was at Sumner, and everything, I don't know about the food and what have you. I can't remember.
Can't remember?
Just regular food, you know.
Yeah. I mean, but what was life like? Was it tough? I mean, I've heard people describe the wartime or doing the war or whatever. I mean, was it tougher than normal?
I don't think so. I think just more or less normal. I was going to Sumner. My older brother had gone to the during the war. He was in the Navy, and just routine. Okay. I didn't feel any difference or anything.
Right. So then you went on to KU. Is that what I heard you say?
I went to KU I went to junior college at Sumner. That was when the same teachers that taught high school taught junior college. Okay. You had the Kansas Junior College up there on State, and then you had the Kansas branch at Sumner.
Okay. And so this was kind of a carryover from slavery days, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got my diploma from junior college, then I went to KU.
Up at Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what did you study up at Lawrence?
I studied accounting, American history, and just in general. I didn't graduate from KU because the Army called me.
Okay, so where did you go in the Army?
I went to Korea.
You went to Korea?
I went to a station in Busan in the southern part.
Okay, so you were kind of close to the demilitarized zone?
I was in the community. I was in the communications.
Communications.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, was that interesting for you?
It was. I did my basic at Fort Riley, and then I went down to Camp Gordon, Georgia for my secondary, which communications. And then from there I went to Fort Lawton, Washington, then on over to Korea.
All right.
One of the things about the segregation is that when I left at Camp Gordon, they had They had the service station. They had 1, 2, 3, and 4, and the service stations, service centers were for the blacks. And then they had the movies, and you only had the one day, I think one day a week to go to the movies. And a little joke I said about the movies that we were sitting in the Jim Crow section, and by the time the sound reaches, the scene had changed.
Tell me about that Jim Crow section. What is that?
Well, it just where all the blacks sit. I know we went back there, went back in the back, and sit back there during the movie. And then the service station had the day in service station where you go and play ping pong, whatever you want to play at the service center.
Okay, and this was in Georgia?
It was in Georgia, right outside Augusta, Georgia.
Okay. And this, we're talking
1951. Good. And when I got ready to leave Camp Garden, I had two choices. I'd either be a cadre or a leader down at Camp Garden, Georgia, or else I'd go to Korea. So I told him I'd rather go to Korea.
Rather than face that segregation, huh?
Right, right. And then when I came up on the bus from Camp Garden to Memphis, then that's when you had to get your food at back there in the back by the kitchen. Ooh. You know, you couldn't go in the front door.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And then they had the fountains there where it had black and white and fountains and everything. I know you read about
that. Yeah, I experienced some of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And tell me about your feelings at this point. I mean, you're a military guy, and you serve in the country, and you done everything right, and you've been good family and go to church, and yet somebody sends you to the back. Tell me about that.
You know, really, I didn't have any feelings, to tell you the truth. You knew where you were supposed to go, and you just more or less went. You know, I didn't think about it, because then the one thing I knew, I was coming up to Kansas City, Kansas, it didn't bother me.
It didn't bother me at all. Didn't make you mad at all?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any feeling. I just more or less knew I was getting out of Georgia and coming up to Kansas. But
so that was
it wasn't too better. It wasn't much better in Kansas, but then, too, I was home.
All right. So what were you treated like in the military, in career? Was that pretty segregated as well?
No. I was with the infantry. The 73rd Infantry Battalion in Seoul, and so I didn't feel any segregation there because it was more or less a black unit, you know, and that was it.
Okay, were the promotion pretty much on target? Because in 1948, Truman declared that the military services would be completely desegregated.
Mm-hmm.
Were you, they still had black units at the time, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. But was the promotions coming for you and whatever?
Yeah, I went in as a private, came out as a sergeant. So promotions were okay according to your ability and how well you could use the radio and signal corps and all that stuff there, the flags and what have you.
All right.
So it was interesting.
All right. Let's get back to the Plaza Bowl now. You mentioned Monarch Bowl, you mentioned Melody Lanes, and then you said you bowled, or your wife bowled at Plaza Bowl.
Plaza Bowl.
And was Plaza Bowl a white establishment?
It was, but then too, it was more or less mixed.
Right.
It was more or less mixed, and at that particular time, I think Helen Bryant, she was the league coordinator at Plaza, that before she went over to King Louis East.
Okay. So what year are we talking about now?
We're talking about probably the early 60s, I'd say, or maybe the mid-60s.
Okay.
Around that area.
All right. So we got 1926, you're born. 1950, you're in Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas. Okay, mm-hmm. 1951 or 52, you're going into the military.
Right.
And so this is now 1962-ish.
That's it. Right, right.
And so people are congregating together, they're getting along, and et cetera, in Plaza Bowl?
I think so.
Okay.
I didn't hear of any altercations. I imagine so, you know, just very sociable, amiable. Couldn't have any problem.
What's your best bowl?
Oh, goodness. I think it's around 277.
277. Do you remember the day you bowled it?
No.
No? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've only had, I think I've only had two 700s. And I've had this Let's see, in the summer of this year, I had a 267, which was good for me. Mm-hmm. But
you were just kind of bowling for recreation. It doesn't seem like you had that drive that the other bowlers have to be, you know, good at what, real good, or compete high. Or am I misreading you?
No, I think everybody has the potential. Well, have potential, and then they have the desire to bowl a perfect game.
Okay.
Now, my brother James, he has a perfect game, but
is it sanctioned? Is it sanctioned?
Yeah, it's sanctioned. Okay. Yeah, he's over in Kansas. Mm-hmm. But you know, you always try to do your best. Try to do your best, and I still practice maybe two or three times a week and everything.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's fun and sociable. I'd rather bowl in a mixed league where you have the men and women more so than just all man's league.
All right.
Seems like it's more you enjoy it. You enjoy
it. More vibrant, right?
Yeah, you enjoy it better.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A couple more questions and we'll be through. Okay, as you look back on your life and whatever, is there something missing, or is there something that you would have liked to do, or is there something you'd like to say as you move into your mid-80s? Is there something left unsaid?
You know, actually, by being 83 years old, I've been well blessed. The good Lord has really taken care of me, and I tried to live a Christian life. And one thing I like to do is to bowl my perfect game. Of course, I like to do that. I'm still thriving for that. But outside of that, I've enjoyed my life, and it's been good to me. And my wife and I raised two children, Charles Jr., which is a chaplain at the City Union Mission, and my daughter, Karen, she's a postal employee down in Fort Worth, Texas, and I have two grandchildren, Jordan, which is a Marine at Camley June, and Kia, she's in attending KU now. So we've been well blessed, and I thank the good Lord every morning when I put my foot on the floor.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Second thing, has it been hard, last question, has it been hard to be a nice guy? You seem to sort of handle this whole segregation thing. I remember you saying that I know my place and I stayed in it, and you seem to sort of take the bumps and the bruises and the things that are going on around you with at least an easy temperament. You know, you get into the military and you sort of, you know, kind of glide along and go along with segregation and go on and make good over in Pusan career. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of say, you know, like, you're blessed and all of this. I mean, is there anything that tells you to be such a nice guy? What does it take?
Well, actually, it takes a whole lot of turn the other cheek. It takes a lot of people that say bad things about you, what have you, just more or less accept it, you know. And if I had lived my life over, I don't see very many changes I would make. I go to church every Sunday. We have the mass. Sometimes I go to Bible study, and you know, so I try to live my life day by day as if a Christian would, and I try to remember that you know, no matter how bad things might seem, they could be worse.
Hmm.
So sometimes you got to take time to count your blessings.
We've been talking to Mr. Charles McPhail, a real, real nice guy. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.